Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
My name is Judy Bailey. I'm going to be interviewing my mother, Anna Lorene Bailey. Today is Saturday, January 23, 2016, and it's about 10 a.m. We are sitting in my mother's house in her dining room, and that's where the interview is taking place. Okay, so this is part of the oral history program with the Midwest Genealogy Center. It's called Tell Me a Story. So I'm going to be asking my mother questions about her past and about her personal life and sometimes how that related to world events and local events and that sort of thing. So we'll start with a question, Mom, of where did you grow up?
In Cedar County, Missouri.
And that was Cedar County's in South Missouri.
In South Missouri, yes.
Okay. And what was your childhood like?
Well, it was pretty simple. We lived on a farm. We didn't have much. No running water, no electricity. So it was a pretty hard life.
And you grew most of your food in a garden?
We tried to raise everything we could and canned and had, you know, large gardens, and that's the way you eat. Of course, we lived on a farm. We had our own milk, our own eggs, so that helped a lot.
So you raised chickens, you raised pigs. Grandpa butchered the pigs?
We always had meat. Yeah, we always butchered about probably 5 hogs a year because we had a large family, and we didn't ever buy anything like that. We had the lard, and that's when we made pie crust out of lard then.
Yeah.
So that helped farmers a lot.
So you didn't really have money coming in, but you raised what you could, and then the few things that you had to buy, what did you barter? You traded with the stuff that you raised there on the farm?
Back then, you could sell eggs. You know, you'd save your eggs. You'd take a case of eggs to town. And that's where most of our money came from. And
buy flour?
Well, now my dad raised, wheat. And I can remember him taking wheat to the mill and trading it for flour.
Okay.
That's what it was made out of, the wheat.
Okay.
And my dad didn't pay rent in money. It was part of the crops that went to the owner.
Okay.
Who rented the farm. And so that's the way he paid rent.
Okay, so the farm you lived on, you rented, and you paid that rent with a certain percentage of the crops.
That's right.
Okay. Okay. And Grandma, which would be your mother, made the clothing for the kids. Where did the material come from?
Well, sometimes it was somebody else's outgrown clothes. I never remember having very many new clothes.
Did Grandma make the clothes that you had?
Yes, she made everything that ever dressed that I wore when I was small.
I recall something about the feed sacks.
Well, yes, we got the chicken feed came in really pretty sacks. And you'd actually try to go to, when you bought it, you'd try to match the sacks so you'd have enough to make a dress or whatever. You could make sheets, curtains, and everything out of the feed sacks.
Yeah, okay. I remember you saying that some of the clothing was made out of feed sacks, but they were like gingham prints and stuff like that. So it was beautiful material.
Yeah, it was. You couldn't tell them from, you know. And everybody did it, so
yeah.
You wasn't the only one.
Well, it was probably a marketing technique of the feed companies.
I think it probably was.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they knew you'd buy their product if they supplied it in beautiful material. So.
And you could make slips or anything.
Yeah.
I know I had a friend that I found some, you know, here a few years ago, and he asked me for one. He said his mother even made his shorts out of them.
Yeah. Tell me how your mom and dad met.
Well, my dad was the only single person in his family, and so he was taking care of his parents, but he was called into the Army, and then his dad passed away, so he had to get a discharge and come back home to take care of his mother. And
now, that was during World War One.
That was World War One.
Okay.
Yes. And my mother actually lived across the kind of the pasture way from them, and her dad and my dad used to do carpenter work together, and that's the way they were acquainted, and they ended up getting married.
Okay. And then tell me a little bit about your early years then. After your parents got married, they continued to live with your dad's parents because he was still taking care of his parents. Is that correct?
Well, his dad was gone, but he was still taking care of his mother.
His mother, yes.
So we lived with her until I was about 10 years old.
Okay.
And when she passed away, but then we still lived there on that farm. And I lived there until I was about 15 years old.
Okay.
When I graduated from high school in Kaplan or Mills.
Okay, and then what happened then? How come you moved down to the farm that all us grandkids are familiar with at that point? Well, but why did you move? Why didn't you stay there?
Well, they got a chance to get a good buy on that farm, so they wanted something of their own.
Oh, okay, so instead of paying rent, then they bought this other farm down the road.
Farm. Yeah, they bought the farm. I forget what it was, and some, you know, had a good price on it, so they bought it.
Okay.
And was able to pay it off eventually. And so then I had to change high schools. Part of that farm was actually in Stockton School, and part of it was in El Dorado.
Okay.
So I ended up going to El Dorado.
Okay. So you finished your last 2 years of high school in El Dorado then?
Yes. I graduated in 1941 from El Dorado.
Okay. Now, the farm there that you moved to that your parents then owned, how many acres was that, do you think?
Well, I don't remember how many it was. It was a fairly good farm, though. It had large pasture. It even had some land that belonged to it that my dad had to ford the river and go over there to farm.
Okay, okay. All right. So you were there until you graduated from high school. What happened after you graduated from high school?
Well, I was there at home for, maybe 3 or 4 months. And then I went to come to Kansas City.
And what caused you to come to Kansas City?
I had cousins up here, and so I think they told me it was a pretty good place to come and get a job. So.
Okay. So you left the farm, and you came to the big city because you had several cousins already in Kansas City, and they encouraged you to come then.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And so when you came up here, where did you get a job?
Well, I was only 17 years old, and it's kind of hard to get a job when you're 17. But I got on at Montgomery Ward, and I worked there till I guess I turned 18, and then I learned how to rivet and went to the bomber plant.
Okay, so you were at the appropriate age, so you were able to get on at the bomber plant, which became the Bendix plant.
No, it wasn't Bendix. It was North American Bomber.
North American Bomber plant.
It was building B-25 bombers.
Okay, and they sent you to school to train you how to be a riveter.
Yes.
Okay. And who else worked there with you, of your cousins or people you knew?
Well, Cleta started out there, but she didn't stay there very long, so it was just Ruby. She was a friend.
Okay. And then you're still living with the other cousins, which were Bertie and Velda. But they were working at Lake City.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And various other cousins come in.
What's that?
It was various other cousins come and went.
Okay. So, and did you all live in the same place then?
Yes, we did then.
Okay. And so, working at different places on different shifts.
Van Brunt's where it was.
What's that?
We lived on Van Brunt.
Van Brunt. Yeah. We went down and saw that house, didn't we?
516. 516
yeah.
Van Brunt.
Okay. So, various cousins, female cousins, would come and go and work in different places at that time. Okay, and then this is the same period of time that you met Dad, my father, your husband. So can you tell us about that?
Well, Ruby, the girl I lived with, she was his, what we call, sparring partner at the bomber plant.
Okay, so and she drove the rivets and...
He drove the rivets.
He drove the rivets.
And she was on the other side.
Okay.
And she got us a ride to work with him.
Okay, so you rode to work with Dad, and that's how you and he got to know each other.
Yes.
Okay. And you guys were working the night shift, and that was another reason you needed a ride, because the buses didn't run? Is that what you said?
Well, I worked from 4 to 12, and it's pretty hard at midnight to get a bus ride, so you really needed a ride.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so what year did you come to Kansas City?
Just a few months after I graduated in 41.
In 1941, okay. And that was the same year that Pearl Harbor was bombed, and so that's the year that brought us into the war then.
Yes, it was.
And did you see the business at the bomber plant pick up a lot then?
Well, it was going around the clock.
Okay.
24 hours a day.
Okay. Okay. And how long did you work there?
Until the war was over.
Until the war was over. And so what happened when the war ended? Because it was just like all of a sudden the atomic bomb was dropped and the Japanese surrendered and then the war was over. What happened at the bomber plant?
Well, I remember the night the news came over that the war was over, and it was every gun in there stopped. It was dead silence.
Yeah, all the machines stopped, no more Rivington, and everybody was there, but it was dead silent all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Then did people celebrate or what?
Well, I can't remember. I guess we must have.
Yeah, okay. So did you still have a job, or what happened at the bomber plant?
No, our job was over. We did work two or three more nights sorting out rivets, because we used different kinds of rivets.
Okay, so basically you worked a few more days closing up the plant, and then the doors were closed and that plant was closed.
It was over.
Okay, so what did you do then?
Well, I got a job at the dime store, and enough to keep me eating and paying my rent, and I worked there till Lane came home.
Okay, so you worked there until my dad came home.
Uh-huh.
And then you all got married then?
Yeah, in a couple of days.
Okay, he came home from the war, and a couple of days later, you all got married.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell me about life after that, then. Where did you guys live then?
Well, we went to Brookfield.
You went to Brookfield. That's Brookfield, Missouri, North Missouri, where my dad's family is from.
Uh-huh. And we lived with his parents for, I guess, maybe 6 months.
Okay.
Then we rented a house out in the country. Not a very good house.
Yeah.
Had about two or three rooms you could live in.
Yeah.
And that's where Linda, my oldest daughter, was born.
Yeah.
So we lived there, I guess, about a year. Then we rented a house, that one over there that had the cedar trees around it, over towards Buckner.
Okay.
And that's where Barbara was born.
Okay.
I guess we had that leased for about a year.
Okay.
Then we moved back over by where you was born.
Which was by Helen Vinson and Elmo. Was it kind of on their farm?
No, it was on his parents' farm.
Oh, okay. Okay. Are any of those houses still standing?
I don't think they are.
Okay.
And we was living there when your daddy was applying for disability. So he hadn't got it. Well, he got a check in the mail. I think it was about $800. And he said, we're going back to Kansas City.
Okay, so that's what brought you back to Kansas City.
So the next day he came to Kansas City and rented an apartment.
Okay, and that apartment, was that the one on
Euclid.
Euclid. Okay, so you came back to Kansas City, you rented an apartment on Euclid, you had the three little girls, and then did Dad find a job or what?
Yeah, he went to work in construction.
He went to work in construction, okay. And how long did he stay in construction?
Oh, I don't know. Quite a while, I guess, but then he eventually went to sell insurance.
Okay. And so then you were on Euclid. How long did you live there?
I imagine we had a lease there or not, but we bought that trailer.
Okay, then you bought a trailer.
And moved over there on Benton.
Okay, on Benton Boulevard. Okay, and is that where Daryl, the oldest son, was born?
No, we moved the trailer on down into the trailer park on Askew.
Okay.
That's where Daryl was born.
Okay, so you lived there on Benton Boulevard in the trailer for how long?
Oh, maybe a year.
Okay, and then you took that trailer to a trailer park.
Yeah, on Askew.
On Askew. And then how long were you down there in the trailer park?
Well, the trailer burnt.
Okay, the trailer burnt, that's right.
And so...
How old do you think I was when the trailer burnt? Because I recall that.
Well, Daryl was a baby.
Okay, so I was 3.5 years older than Daryl, so I was about...
You're about 3.5.
3.5, 4 years old then when the trailer burnt.
So from there, we moved back up on Benton again.
In the apartment building?
Where Aline and Vernon lived.
Yeah, that apartment building,
yeah,
okay.
In the basement of that building. And I don't know how long we was there, but we went down to Sedalia. He thought he had a job down there, but it didn't pan out. So we was down there maybe 2 or 3 months.
Okay.
And then we moved back to Lenexa, Kansas.
From Sedalia, you moved to Lenexa, okay.
And Ricky was born... he's born when we moved back on Benton, and he was when we went to Lenexa. I think he was about a year old.
Okay. So how long did you stay in Lenexa?
We had that lease for a year, I think.
Okay. Was Dad still selling insurance then?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
And that was when we bought this house out here.
Okay. The house that we're sitting in having this interview was after Lenexa, and... that was when Rick was about a year old, do you think? Okay. And then...
Well, when he moved here, he lacked from November till February being 2 years old.
Okay. So he was almost two when we moved here, Rick. We're talking about Rick. Yeah. Okay. This is where Ron, your youngest son, your last child, was born then.
Yeah, he was about 6 years younger than Rick.
Okay. And you and all your siblings were born at home, is that correct? Except for Ruth, the youngest.
Yeah, she's born at home.
Oh, was she? But at the other farm.
Yeah.
You and your brothers were born at the first farm there that you rented from your dad's, or that you lived at with your dad and his mother.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, you moved to the farm that you all bought down the road, and that's where Ruth was born, and she was born at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then your own children, your first two children, were born at home.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, they were.
Okay. And then I was your third child, and I was the first one born in a hospital.
Well, it wasn't a very big hospital. It was down to Brookfield. It was kind of a converted house.
Okay.
Into what they called a hospital.
Okay, but instead of delivering alone at home with relatives, Dad actually took you to this facility, and that's where I was born.
Well, I had a doctor at home when you were both born at home.
Oh, okay.
There was a doctor there.
Okay. And then your three boys then were born?
Daryl and Ricky was both born at the old St. Joe Hospital.
Okay, which is no longer there.
No, it's no longer there. And Ronnie was born, I think he was still born in, what was he born at? Do you remember where Ronnie was born? Yes, Ronnie was born at St. Joe, and I had a lot of problems before he was born. And I was in the hospital for about 17 days. And Lane was still selling insurance, and he would come by every morning and sit there with me before he went on to work.
And what about us kids at home?
All you kids was staying here at home, and the neighbors was kind of taking charge of the laundry and stuff. I don't know what I'd done without them.
Yeah, yeah, I remember you saying that. That was quite an ordeal back then. You had five little ones at home, but we were going to school during the day?
Yeah, he was going to school during the day.
Okay.
And the day before he was born, night before he was born, the doctor had told my husband that if he'd just keep me from having the baby for a little bit longer, everything would be okay. But the next morning they were getting a call that I was in labor.
Okay, and so Dad was...
He wouldn't let any of you kids go to school. He said, all of you stay home.
Yeah. And you went through a lot of different things. What ended up being the problem?
A gallstone was a block in the liver bile. And since I was 7 months pregnant, they couldn't take an x-ray, so they didn't know what the problem was.
Okay, so Ronnie was delivered at 7 months then because you went into labor.
Yeah, he was premature.
Okay. Wasn't there some point of time in there where Dad thought he was going to lose you?
Well, I don't think they knew for sure that either one of us, me or Ronnie, would make it.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't figure out what was wrong.
Yeah. So you delivered Ronnie early at 7 months. So
yeah,
he was,
yeah, I think it was
2 months premature. And but he ended up being okay. And then once you delivered Ronnie, they were able to take an x-ray and figure out what was going on or what?
Yeah, they took an x-ray. And then about 6 months later, I had a five-hour surgery. I had ruptured a hiatal hernia. And so they fixed that, took the gallstones out, and the appendix out.
Okay. And you haven't had a surgery since, and you're almost 92.
No, I haven't been in their hospital for much of anything since.
Okay. Okay, that's fantastic. Okay, so you got over that huge, major event, and so you're living here where we're sitting at this moment in Independence, and Dad's still selling insurance. Tell me about life back then.
Well, he was selling insurance, but then he had the idea that he wasn't spending much time at home because he had to go in early. He was late coming home. He hadn't spent much time with you kids. So I know they went into this place over there to talk about insurance, and he ended up buying a mattress factory.
Okay, now you say they went over to this place. Did they go into the mattress factory to sell insurance to the person that owned it?
I think that's what they went in for.
And it was, you say they, it was his partner?
Yeah, there was supposed to be another guy buy in with us.
Yeah.
But he couldn't get his money.
Okay.
So we ended up buying it by ourselves.
Okay, so originally Dad went over there to sell insurance, and Witz owned the factory,
yeah,
right? A man named Witz.
Witz Manufacturing.
And they found out, Dad and his partner, that Witz was selling the factory. And so he and his partner decided that they thought they would buy the factory. And but who was his partner's name? Do you remember?
Oh, man, I used to remember, but I forgot now what his name was.
Well, that's okay.
He sold insurance with him. He was another insurance guy.
Okay. So that guy pulled out, and so you and Dad end up buying the factory by yourself.
Yes.
So that was a transition from Dad selling insurance to running a small business. Tell me a little bit about the early years with the factory.
Well, of course, I hadn't worked away from home, and he told me that I was going to have to go over and help out a little while. Well, I wasn't even driving a car yet then, so I had to go get a driver's license, learn how to drive a car, and go over there, and the little bit I worked out was over 20 years.
So you worked a little while, that ended up being 20 years.
Yeah.
But what did you do over at the factory?
Well, I made all the covers that went on. I was a seamstress.
Okay, so the covers that covered the mattresses, you sewed them together. And then Dad was downstairs, and he would put the mattresses together using the machinery that was available at the time.
Yeah, he had some help downstairs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so how long did you own the factory?
Well, it must have been around 25 years.
Okay. And it was rough there at first, but ended up making a pretty good living from it.
It was very rough at first, and even Daryl and Ricky worked over there a little. Of course, out of extra school. But eventually it pulled out.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you worked over there, you were able to work your own hours so that you left after the kids went to school and you came home before they got back home.
Yeah, I always tried to be here.
Yeah.
When the kids was home.
Okay. Okay, so you and Dad had the factory for about 25 years, and then you retired.
We sold it to the boys.
And you sold it to the boys, and they had it for a few years. What did you and Dad do after that when you retired?
Well, we worked over there for the boys for a little while, and then I quit first over there because of their finances. And so I didn't want to sit around home, so I decided to get a job. So I went to the school to see if I could work, and they put me on right away.
Okay, what school?
I worked mostly at, which one was it over there? Oh, I can't remember. Yeah, I worked at Mill Creek Elementary in the kitchen, helping serve meals. So I would work about, 2 hours a day or three. And I worked there for 7 years. I think the last 2 years I worked just as a fill-in when they needed somebody, substitute.
Yeah.
And then I finally just quit altogether. And since then, I've just been living a home worker, I guess, home mother.
Yeah. So you and Dad enjoyed retirement there together. You work in a few hours. He helped Ronnie and Terry over at the factory for a while. And then in 2004, he passed. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. How did that affect you?
Well, it's been a pretty lonely life.
Yeah. You miss him a lot.
I do.
So what do you do to keep busy around here?
Well, I got a fairly large house, so I try to keep it halfway clean. And I got a very big yard. And in the summertime, I used to do the mowing and everything. Of course, I'm over 90 years old now, so I can't do that. But I have a little raised garden out here. I enjoy it. And just work around in the yard. I have guys that come and mow the yard. And they're real nice people. They'll do things for you. And they picked my leaves up, which was a lot of them this year.
Yeah.
They just grind them up and haul them off. And I think they're going to do some trim and brush and stuff back there when it comes spring.
Okay, you like to keep your yard pretty tidy, I think.
About the cleanest one in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Okay, Mom, can you tell me a little about your religious beliefs, your spiritual beliefs?
Well, I believe you have to believe in God, and I go to church all the time, and I believe that Jesus was crucified, and if he hadn't been, we couldn't be saved, and I hope someday my whole family is, but you don't know about that. You have to work on that.
Yeah.
So
that's between each individual person and God.
Yeah, it is.
But your belief is...
I believe that there's a hereafter. And I think that's where you want to go, to the good hereafter.
Yeah.
So.
And to get there, you need to be saved. And to be saved, what does it take to be saved?
Well, you have to believe in God and confess your sins and ask God to save you. You ready? I am a Christian, and I accepted by faith that Jesus Christ died for me on the cross. And I have received him as my Lord and Savior.
Okay. Well, I know you have, and I just wanted us to be able to embrace that on this recording. So thank you for sharing that with us. Okay, so we're going to back up a little bit now, because we didn't cover something that I would have liked to. And that is, what was it like during the war?
Well, we was living with ration stamps then, and you couldn't be wasteful. You was donating stuff for the war's effort. And so we had a stamp for coffee. We had a stamp for sugar. You couldn't get a pair of leather shoes unless you had a stamp. And, of course, us girls didn't have a car, so if you'd had a car, you would have had a stamp for gas and tires because they needed the rubber. So it was a pretty hard time. I mean, you weren't extravagant about anything.
Yeah.
And we would go out to eat. We'd go to the show and things like that.
Yeah, you could do stuff like that.
You could do stuff like that.
Okay. Okay, but they rationed everything that...
Sugar and coffee and everything.
Yeah.
Even meat.
Things that they needed to supply the soldiers. So you had the people back here had to ration them.
Everybody was behind the war effort. Then it seemed like everybody was really, you know, putting out all kinds of efforts for the war.
Yeah.
It's not like it is nowadays.
Yeah. So everyone sacrificed willingly back then. They were glad to do it because they knew that the soldiers needed it.
You'd always be out picking up iron and aluminum cans and everything for the war effort.
Okay. And when you worked at the bomber plant and you were shooting the rivets in the plane, what plane was it again?
A B-25 bomber.
A B-25 bomber. Then the women that did that, and it was mostly women because the men were in the service, became known as the Rosie the Riveters.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Yeah, okay. And now we have been to several organizational meetings and events that are honoring Rosie the Riveters. Okay, so you're almost 92 years old. Tell me about the changes you've seen during your life.
Well, there's been a lot of them. When I was a kid at home, we didn't even have a radio. You didn't have no fans. Of course, the air conditioner hadn't even been invented. And I can remember when they started talking about television, I couldn't imagine what a television would be. Where was a picture coming from? Or how could you be talking on the phone and you know, see somebody? I couldn't even think about that. And we didn't even have a telephone, no electricity, no running water.
So you had not only no television, but no radio, no running water. You had to get your water from a well?
Yes, you had to. For drinking water, we... had to walk about 100 feet down to the well, draw up a bucket of water, and carry it back to the house. And when you done laundry, you had to call barrels of water up to do your laundry, which you didn't have a washing machine. You did it on, when my first year being married, I had a washboard, and that ain't too much fun.
Yeah, so you filled up a barrel or something with water, and you have a washboard, and you kind of beat the clothes on the washboard.
And you rub it up and down.
You rub it up and down. Okay. Okay, so you had no electricity, so what did you do for light at night when it started getting dark?
We used a kerosene lamp.
Kerosene lamp. So you would light a kerosene lamp. Did you have a lot of them, or it was just real dark?
Well, you had to have more than one, of course, and for to do homework... It sat on the kitchen table, and that's where you done your homework.
Yeah.
Now, my grandma had what you call a Aladdin lamp. They were a little bit better. They had
what was it called?
Aladdin.
Okay.
And they had a little, I don't know what you call it. It wasn't bulbs, but some kind of things on them. It was a better light, but
okay.
It was a more expensive lamp, so most people didn't have them. They just had a kerosene lamp.
When do you remember electricity coming in where you could flip a switch?
Well, I was still on that farm at home, and REA came through the country, and I remember my dad saying he didn't want it because we didn't have refrigeration or anything, you know. But when it came through, he let them hook up, and that's when we got the first light.
Okay. Did you get a refrigerator then?
We had a refrigerator.
What did you do for refrigeration before that?
Well, we had an ice box.
Okay, so you bought ice.
Ice, you get some ice. Now, we didn't always have that. Now, my grandmother, she had a deep well. And I remember her putting cream and butter in a bucket and dropping it down into that well.
Okay.
For it to stay cold.
Okay, okay. So, then when you had your garden going, you canned food.
Well, you canned stuff. There was no freezers, of course.
No freezer.
You had to can most of it. You made jelly and stuff like that, you know. And you canned anything you could, you know.
What did you do with the meat that you butchered?
Well, my mom did a lot of, you could can meat, and she done a lot of canned meat.
Okay.
You'd pour grease over and seal it up like you would the fruit.
Okay.
And it would keep.
Okay.
Now, of course, bacon was cured.
Okay.
And my dad used, we had a smokehouse, and that's what they did. They smoked the meat in there. There'd be a fire.
How did that work in the smokehouse back then? You had a fire going out there?
There'd be a fire in there, but it would only be smoking. I don't know what kind of wood they used, but it would only do the smoke, and it would smoke the meat.
And then what would you do? You'd just leave it hanging out there?
Yeah, it was cured then. It would keep.
Okay. Did you wrap it up? Or
I don't think so. I think it just hung.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so when did you get your first radio? Was that after electricity had come in? I guess it would have to be, wouldn't it?
No, I think you could get a battery radio, and I think one of my brothers got a radio.
Okay. So there on the farm?
Yes.
So you would listen to the radio. What was, nowadays radio tends to be a lot of talk shows and music. What was it back then?
Well, I think there was some shows on, you know. I forgot what they were that you could listen at.
More entertainment type shows?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Did they have music back then? Or?
Of course, my music back then was hillbilly.
Oh, okay.
Country music.
Yeah.
And, of course, when I was a young kid, we used to go to parties, and we had games that you kind of dance at, you know.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing.
Yeah. Was it kind of like the different farmers would go into town, or what?
No, we had one family that was that would play for square dances. They could play the fiddle, and so you go to different people's houses.
Oh, okay.
And they'd have square dances.
Okay, okay. So that so the radio came in, and that gave you a little bit of entertainment, and you got electric lights. What was that like doing your homework and you had electric light? Or was that after? When did they come in? Were you still at home on the farm then?
Yes, I was.
Okay.
It's like daylight and dark.
Yeah, yeah. I bet as a young person, you thought that was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, it was a cool thing.
Yeah.
And of course, about you, you know, you didn't have electric arms. You had to heat arms on the stove and do your ironing.
Yeah.
So the electric iron was pretty good.
Yeah, that made a huge difference, didn't
it? Yeah, it did.
I'll bet. So did all that stuff start coming on pretty quick as soon as electricity came through?
I think it did.
Then you got an iron, you got a refrigerator, you got electric lights, and so it just improved life quite a bit.
Well, it changed life a lot, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So when did you get your first television set? Where were you then?
I don't even remember.
Were you here?
No. Oh, we got it in the trailer, when we lived in the trailer park.
Okay, okay. So you were married, had children.
We had it when the trailer burnt.
Okay, okay. So you had a TV then. Okay, so...
that would have been about the time Daryl was a baby.
Okay. And so...
Yeah, Daryl was born in the trailer park.
And it was just black and white back then, probably a small set?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, so, Mom, how would you like to be remembered?
Oh, as a good person, and I would help people, and I don't know.
Okay, Mom, so do you have any words of advice for your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, as far as that goes?
Well, just like I said, just always be there for them and help them out any way you can, financially or any other way.
Okay.
Advice, if you know what to say.
Yeah, yeah, just stand behind them, you know,
always,
try to be there for
always
them.
Always be there for them.
Okay.
After all, they're your relation.
What's that?
After all, you're behind all of them anyway.
Yeah.
You're their relation.
Yeah. What about anybody else, just in general? Any words of wisdom? I mean, you've lived up to this point almost 92 years, and we hope we can do this again at 102. But any advice as far as way to live, that you've lived so long and had pretty good health this whole time?
Well, yeah, I thank God that I've had good health, and I just like to be a good neighbor, and I have good neighbors.
Uh-huh.
And if they need help, help them.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, Mom, tell me a little bit about this neighborhood way back when and how it is now and the neighbors and that sort of thing.
Well, I've lived in this house over 50 years and always had pretty good neighbors. But now I'm the oldest one around and I don't have many of those neighbors left and I miss them.
Yeah, I know you do. Tell us about the neighbors you were closest to.
Well, that was probably Driscoll's next door.
Yeah, Reba and Cliff.
They're both gone.
Yeah.
And I miss them.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there was Mary and Carlton.
Yeah, Mary's still around, but she's living with her son, and I hardly ever see her.
Okay.
Yeah, they were good neighbors. And
yeah.
These neighbors have moved on, but most of them have passed away.
Yeah, like the Yates.
Yeah, they were... Well, they were the same age as your dad, but they've been gone several years. I miss them, too.
You still have Helen Gulick down the street.
Me and her are the two old women out here.
Yeah, yeah.
She calls me her old neighbor, and I call her my old neighbor.
Yeah.
She's not as old as I am.
Yeah.
But she's been here longer.
Okay. And you still get together with some of the ladies every once in a while?
Well, we get together and go out to eat sometimes.
Yeah, but most of them...
We haven't done that for quite a while, though.
Yeah. Who do you do that with?
Well, Doris Roberts over here and Shirley Renard. She's still alive. She lives in Blue Springs. And some of them that used to live out here.
Okay.
Some of them I don't even know.
Okay. Okay, Mom. Well, I guess we'll close this out by me just stating that I remember my childhood growing up, a lot of love in this family. And like you say, you know, you're there to support your kids. And I can attest to that personally. And by knowing how you supported my brothers and sisters with love and anything they needed, really. And I just remember this house being full of love, and I know the rest of the kids feel the same way. You had six kids, and you've lost two already. Lost Rick when he was 20, very young.
20.
And we just lost Barb this last year. Lots of grandkids, great-grandkids. You've even got one great-great-grandchild now. So
I've got 18 great-grandkids and one on the way.
Yeah. So we still have the big family dinners over here at Christmas and Thanksgiving. And you're still doing a lot of that work, pulling those meals together, even at your age. So we all just feel blessed to still have you and still have you in such good health. And I just want to thank you for this opportunity to interview you and get some of this down on tape. And we're going to make copies for the other kids. And I know it'll become a treasured possession of all of them. And it'll probably be passed down to your grandkids. So I just want to thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for doing this. And I hope they all enjoy it.
I think they will. Love you, Mom.
Love you, too.
Okay, as it turns out, we're not quite finished. We thought of a few other questions and information that we'd like to include on this, and one of them is my mother's birthday. And again, this is an interview with my mother, Anna Loreen Bailey, and her birth date is April 16th, 1924. Okay, one of the questions that we talked about and didn't get recorded was the automobile. Mom, can you tell me a little bit about the automobile as you recall it and when you saw your first one?
Well, I think the first one I remember of, I wasn't very old, I'd say maybe 5 years old, and it was when I lived with my grandma Norman. It belonged to her son, Uncle Jake, who was a brother to my dad, and they would come by and pick my grandma up in it, and she always took me with her. And the best I can remember of the car, I don't remember it having glasses in it. It has some kind of a leather flap that came down over where the windows should be if the weather was bad. Otherwise, I can't remember any windows.
Okay, so there were no windows. What was the mode of transportation then other than automobile? How did you get around back then?
Well, at our house, all we had was a wagon and team.
A team being horses.
Horses. And you didn't go very far. You went, you know, we went maybe 5 miles to a grocery store once a month, I expect, and just bought enough stuff. It lasted you.
Okay. All right. Another question that actually occurred to me specifically is the houses that we lived in Lenexa and Sedalia. And I thought the other kids might find this interesting if Mom could give us a description of those houses, because we were all very young and I know we have memories of those places, but sometimes I think mine aren't correct, or maybe I have the two places confused. So Mom, first we lived in Sedalia.
Start with Linda.
Huh?
Start with Linda.
I'm talking about the houses.
I want to go to the house that she was born in.
So, Mom, describe the house in Sedalia.
Well, best I remember, it was a new house. It was a pretty new house. It was a three-bedroom house and a garage. Had a pretty good yard in it. There was a railroad track went behind the house. It could wake you up in the night. And I remember that the neighbors next door, you kids didn't have many toys, and the people next door, the boy had a little tricycle. Daryl got on it one day and got his foot caught and couldn't get off of it. And you caught a bus right out in front of the house to go to school, which I never did get to go see because I didn't have a car there. And we didn't stay there but about 3 months.
Okay, thank you. Now, what about the house in Lenexa? What was it like?
We had a lease on that for a year, and it had been a tavern, and it was a pretty good-sized house, and it had, I don't know what you'd call them bedrooms, but it had, the back part of it was a great big room, and mostly concrete floor, a lot of windows in it, and there was a bed or two out there. I think that was the first time you kids all really had a bed that you had enough room to sleep in. And there was a pretty big living room, a pretty big yard, and it was a fairly nice place.
I remember that back room. I remember that, and outside where you parked, there was gravel, because that's where cars used to park that came to the tavern. And we found coins out there occasionally, nickels and dimes and stuff. But that back room, wasn't it painted with big polka dots or something? Do you remember that?
Well, it seemed like it was, and then it had wash tubs back there.
Yeah.
It had water back there where you could reach out clothes.
Yeah.
And you kids had to catch your school bus around behind the house. You went down to the street and got on the bus down behind the house.
Well, was there a big old tree in the back?
I think there was.
I believe you showed me a robin's nest in that tree once, and the other kids may remember that too, but I remember you showing me I'm sure it was a robin's nest in that big tree out in the back.
So. Ricky was just a baby because I remember he didn't have too many diapers, so I'd rinse out diapers every day back in that, and they had to call in water. We had to pay for the water.
Yeah.
And so the lady upstairs, sometimes we done our laundry together to save water.
Yeah.
And so...
Okay.
Yeah, wasn't a bad place.
Thank you. My name is Judy Bailey Fields, and I'm going to be interviewing my mother, Anna Laureen Bailey, as a part of the Midwest Genealogy Center Tell Me a Story oral history program. And a copy will be on file there, and we're going to make copies for each of her children, and she'll keep the original, of course. We are having this interview in Independence, Missouri, and we're in my mother's home where all of us kids grew up, and we're sitting at the kitchen table, Mom, are you ready to start this interview?
Yeah, I think I am.
Okay, so I'm going to be asking questions, and want you to expand as much as you want to on any of the answers. So we'll start with your early years. When and where were you born? Where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in April the 16th, 1924, and it was in Cedar County. That's where I grew up, in Cedar County.
Okay, and that's in South Missouri.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And where were you born? I mean, the home, the house, the farm. Tell us about that.
I was born in a house on a farm.
Okay.
And
that farm belonged to?
That's where my dad had taken care of his parents.
Okay. And so that was actually your grandparents' home.
Yes, it was.
And you and your parents and your brothers and sisters, or your brothers anyway, lived there then after, for how long? Tell me about that period of time.
Yeah, all of them was born there but my sister. And, well, we lived there. And
why did you live there?
Well, because they was taking care of, my dad was taking care of his mother.
Okay. And tell me, he was called, when your grandfather died, grandpa was in the service, and he was called home then to take care of your ma or your grandmother, is that correct?
Yeah, he was discharged so he could go home and take care of his mother.
Okay. So you and your family, your dad and your mom and your brothers lived there for how long? How old were you?
Well, I was, I think, about 15 whenever they bought this other farm and they moved there.
Okay. And before that, they were paying rent at the other farm where you were born?
Well, they wasn't paying money, but my dad farmed the land, and so he had to give a certain percent of the crops.
Okay.
That was what was rent.
To the person that actually owned that property,
yes.
That house. And then your parents bought the farm down the road, the one that us kids remember then was the farm. Your grandmother continued to live up there at the top of the hill for a while after you were 15 when you moved. How much longer did your grandmother live?
Well, my grandmother that we lived with, she had passed away when I was about 10 years old. The one that lived up on the hill is my mother's mother.
Oh, I was confused with that then.
Yes.
Okay, so that was Grandma Dilsaver.
Yes, it was.
Okay, so that was the Maslin farm.
No, the farm we lived on was my dad's mother.
Okay, so that was your Grandma Norman.
Yes, it was.
And
that's where I...
But she died when you were 8?
No, I was about 10 years old when she died.
Okay.
But we still lived there.
Oh, I see.
My dad and
okay.
Mom still lived there.
I see. Okay. I was confused on that. So then she died when you were about 10, your Grandma Norman.
Yes.
And then, but y'all continued to live there, your mother and father and brothers. And then when you were about 15, you moved to the farm down the road then, the farm that me and my brothers and sisters remember going to when we traveled to see your folks after you were married and living in Kansas City.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Okay. So tell me a little bit about your parents and your brothers and sisters.
Well, we just an ordinary family. We didn't have very much, you know, and kids entertained themselves. We seemed to get along pretty good. The boys teased me because I was the only girl and the oldest.
Yeah.
And you didn't have toys. You just made up your own games and played them.
Okay.
We did have a croquet set when we lived with my Grandma Norman. And I even remember my dad playing with us.
Okay. And he probably didn't have a lot of time to play.
No, I don't think he had very much. When you're a farmer, you know, you're busy most of the time.
Yeah. Tell me about the chores you and your brothers had.
Well, I think we had to feed chickens and things like that, you know. Probably had to water, because you had to carry the water and put it out to them. And I remember we had some ducks, and ducks will already get your chicken water dirty.
Okay.
And play in it.
Okay,
So you had to take care of that.
Okay.
And the boys, we had to carry in wood because we had to have a wood burning stove, you know. Carry in water and things like that.
So you were the oldest, and then you had four brothers, and then the youngest child was another daughter. But you basically, how old were you when Ruth was born?
I was 17. I'm 17 years older than her.
Okay, and so you weren't home very long. You left home when you were 17, right?
She was 6 months old when I left home.
Oh, I'll be darned. So you didn't really get to grow up with her then?
No, we didn't grow up together.
Okay. Okay, then tell me about life around the farm. I mean, back then there was no running water, electricity, no cars. Tell me about the fact there was no running water. How did you manage that?
Well, when we lived there at my dad's place where he lived, you caught water that came off of your house. You had water spouts that came down. And it went into a big well, what was called a cistern, because they were dug by the with a shovel.
Mm-hmm.
And you got all the water you could catch, and that's all the water you had. And if it didn't rain too much and that well went down pretty low, the water wasn't too good. It's a wonder we hadn't all been sick.
Okay.
But they threw lime in the well. That was supposed to purify your water.
Okay. Now, what about the well where you dropped a bucket down in? Is that what you're talking about?
No, that's the one that was down on the other farm. It's a drill well.
Okay.
And it's just small.
Okay.
And you have a long, slim bucket that goes down in them.
Okay. Okay. So you're talking about your childhood up at the other farm.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no well, so you had to catch all your water, and that was drinking water, bathing water, cooking water, everything.
Everything you use water for.
Okay.
Of course, you had ponds, you know, where the stock drank out of the ponds.
Right.
Things like that.
But so when you cooked with this water, you had to boil it or what?
Well, I don't think we did, but I guess you put it in, you did boil when you cook like potatoes or anything. Nobody I remember was ever very sick.
What'd you do when you wanted to drink a water?
Well, you drawed a bucket of water out and took it in.
Okay. Okay. Tell me about electricity. So early on, you lived without electricity.
We never had electricity in that house at all. It was after we moved down into the other house, what they call REA line came through. And my dad wasn't for having it, but after it got there, he liked it pretty well.
Yeah.
Because we had lights, then we had a refrigerator and that kind of stuff.
So once REA came through, they ran electricity to the house, and then could you flip a switch and a light would come on?
Yeah.
And
sure,
before that, what did you use for light?
Kerosene lamp.
Okay.
That's the way you done your homework. You put the lamp in the middle of the kitchen table and did your homework. And it wasn't a very good light.
Yeah. So that was when the electricity came through, it not only brought light, but what else did it bring?
Well, it made life a lot simpler. You know, you didn't even have an iron. You had to heat your arms on the stove to iron with. And so we got electric arms and the radio and all that kind of stuff that you didn't have.
So you didn't have any of that until you were, till you moved to the other farm and you were 15 years old.
Well, we had it before I was 15, but not too many years before.
Okay. Okay, so electricity made a huge difference.
Yeah, a lot of difference.
Yeah. Tell me about how you got around. Did you have a car? Were there cars back then?
No, we didn't have no car. The only transportation we had was a wagon team.
Okay.
Dad did have a buggy. I remember that he would, if it was rainy day at school, he would come and with the buggy and pick us up.
Okay. So you wouldn't have to walk home.
Yeah.
How far away was school when you had to walk?
Oh, about a mile at least.
Okay. And do you remember walking in the snow? And?
Yeah, I remember when my Paul Delsaver passed away. He passed away pretty young.
And how old were you, do you think?
I was going to grade school. I wasn't too old, but I wasn't. It came an icy day, and my mom was up there, and I wasn't supposed to go to school, but I did.
Okay.
And it was a pretty icy day.
Okay, but so you walked. Did you have boots you put on?
Yeah, we had some kind of snow boots.
Okay. Okay.
And I had to wear them long underwears you had to wear back then.
And what?
You had to have long, you call them long johns, but they weren't fancy ones like you have now.
Yeah, okay.
And the girls hated them.
Yeah, but they kept you warm.
Well, yeah. You had to wear long socks, but they weren't like what we got now.
Yeah.
And you had to stick the underwear down in the socks.
So yeah.
A lot of the girls, when they got to school,
They took them off.
They didn't shake them off.
The girls didn't wear pants. They were wearing skirts, so all that was showing.
Yeah. So it was embarrassing. And so you might have rolled them up so where you couldn't see them.
Okay. And did you do that? Did you roll them up?
I can't really remember doing that.
Okay.
I can't really, but I know some of them did.
Okay. So do you have any best and worst memories of childhood?
Well, not really. Of course, you know, you just made your own fun. You didn't, you know.
And you were the only girl, so you didn't really have a playmate, so.
No, I didn't. Now, when I got a little bit older, Jenny Marcus moved to the house down by us, and we was with each other a lot.
Okay.
To each other's houses.
Because you're about the same age?
Well, I'm older than her.
Okay.
But we seem to get along real well.
Yeah.
So we still do when we see each other.
Okay.
So, and you know, I just made my own playhouse, and I had one doll, the only doll I ever had. And you didn't get a new doll. If you broke it, you got a new head.
Times are different, aren't they?
Yeah, you repaired the old one. So, yeah.
Yeah.
You just done your own thing.
Okay. Did you have any nicknames growing up?
Well, yeah, one that they called me Toots.
And who called you that?
My Uncle Clarence.
Uncle Clarence gave you that name. That was your mother's brother.
And I couldn't talk very plain when I was real small, so that's why he gave me a nickname.
Okay, that's why he called you Toots. And then I can recall seeing a picture that Dad gave you, and on the back he said it was Tootsie. So he kind of used that too.
I guess that's where he got it.
I guess so. Okay. Okay, so tell me about after high school then. You went to high school there in El Dorado?
I went 2 years at Kaplinger Mills.
Okay.
Because, we was in a district where that's where I had to go, I think. So I was a freshman and sophomore there.
Okay.
And then when we moved down to the other place, it was kind of half and half. It was in Stockton. See, I either had to go to Stockton or El Dorado. So I went to El Dorado.
Okay, so that's where you graduated from.
Yeah, junior and senior years at El Dorado.
Okay, and then what did you do after high school?
Well, I came to Kansas City.
Okay, immediately or?
Well, that summer after I graduated, I suppose middle of the summer, I came to Kansas City. And I was just 17, so it was hard to get a job when you're 17. But I did get on at Montgomery Ward. And so I worked there, until the war started, I guess, and I got old enough to go to the bomber plant.
Okay, and what made you come to Kansas City?
Well, I already had cousins up here working, and of course there was no way of getting a job down there, so I just came up here.
What cousins were they?
Well, Verdie Norman and her cousin, Velda Hubbard, were already here. Mary Jane Mann was up here, and so I just came up here.
Were they working at Ward's?
Mary Jane was, but Verdie and Velda was working at Lake City.
Okay, they were old enough to work at someplace like Lake City.
Yeah, they were older than me.
So when you turned 18, then you decided to put an application in at the bomber plant?
Well, I guess I did, and then I went to learn how to rivet.
Okay, they sent you to riveting school. That's what I think you told me before.
2 or 3 weeks. It didn't take you long to learn how to rivet.
Okay. And who else went to the bomber plant with you, of your cousins? Or?
Well, Cletus went with me, but she didn't stay out there too long.
Okay. And were you all living together? Or?
Yeah, I was living on Van Brunt.
You lived in a house on Van Brunt?
We lived in the basement of the house.
Okay. You and several of your female cousins?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you worked at various places?
Yeah, always somebody in bed all the time, somebody working all the time, because the girls that worked at Lake City was on a swing shift. Both places was working 24 hours a day.
Okay. What shift were you on at the bomber plant?
I went in at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and worked till midnight.
Okay. So, is that where you met Dad?
Well, he was working out there, and Ruby was the one that I lived with, and she worked with him, and she got a ride.
She got a ride. She worked with Dad. How did she work with Dad?
Well, he was a visitor, and a riveter, and I think it was in the Bombay place, and she was you have a bucker.
Okay.
She was a bucker.
Okay, so they were kind of like partners doing their job. So you decided to get a ride with him.
Yeah.
And instead of taking the bus or something like that.
Well, it's hard to get a bus at midnight.
Okay.
So you really needed a ride.
Okay, and Dad had a car then, and so Ruby arranged to get a ride with him, and you rode too, and that's how you met Dad and got to know him then, riding back and forth to work.
Yeah.
Okay. You said you drove rivets out there, and then that's what today people call those jobs that the women had during the war as Rosie the Riveter.
Rosie the Riveter.
Okay, and there was a lot of them.
Yes, there was. Most of the guys was in service, and women practically ran the place.
Okay, okay. So tell me a little bit about your job.
Well, you know, you just, when you're a riveter, you just shoot rivets. That's it.
Okay.
I worked on the spar, and it was the middle part, but it went through the wings. And I think I worked on the right wing, and there was different sizes of rivets. You use different things in your rivet gun to shoot them. And that's what you did all night long. You shot rivets.
Okay. And what airplane did you work on?
The B-25 bomber.
How long did it take for y'all to move to go from one plane to the next? How long did you work on one plane?
Well, we worked on a line. And your job was setting at a certain place. When the next place finished up their job, the line moved.
Okay, so the plane, you weren't working on a plane. You were working on this specific part of the plane, and that it was like an assembly line.
Yeah, it was assembly
and
line.
You didn't move. The part moved down the assembly line. And then
it moved up to the end, and then that up there they had what they call reworkers. Now, I worked on it a little bit. If there was bad rivets, they were taken out at that plate right there. And
okay.
Then when it was done and passed inspection, it went off the line. And so the line just kept moving.
Okay. So how long did you work there?
Till the war ended.
Okay. Which was...
1945, I think.
1945, when they dropped the atomic bomb on Japan. And Japan surrendered, and that ended the war. And so what happened at the bomber plant then when everybody was told the war is over?
Well, the news came over the loudspeaker that the news was over, and everything just stopped dead still.
Everything stopped. All the machines, nobody was riveting.
You didn't hear no noise at all. Them rivet guns, when they're gone, they made a lot of noise.
Yeah.
But it just stopped.
Dead silence. So, and then what happened next?
Well, your job was done, but we had to work two or three more nights to sort rivets because we used a lot of different kinds of rivets. And so they had us sorting the rivets, and then our job was done.
Can you remember? I know you said you remembered that it just became dead silent after the news came over. But then after that, did your supervisor come by and tell you you no longer had a job or that you would spend the next several days closing the plant or was there celebration or do you remember?
I don't remember him telling us anything.
Okay. The main thing you remember is just dead silence.
We knew it was over.
Okay. All right. So let's just talk a little bit then about what happened next. The war was over. You spent several days closing up the plant. And then what did you do next?
Well, I had to get a job of some kind to stay up there. So I was going to stay until Lane came home. And I got a job at the dime store.
Okay.
It wasn't a lot of money, but it made enough money to pay my rent and buy groceries and that kind of things.
Okay. Where was Dad at the time that the war ended?
Well, I think he'd been overseas.
So you said you waited for him to come home. How long did it take him to get home?
Well, I don't remember for sure. I don't think it was that long, but I worked there at the dime store Quite a little bit.
Okay. So, I mean, there was a lot of guys that were coming home, had to be processed and transported and probably had to tie up things wherever they were at as well. So then what happened when Dad got home?
We got married.
You got married. you'd been riding back and forth that whole time. So he worked at the bomber plant for a while, but did he get drafted from the bomber plant? Is that how he ended up in the service?
Yeah.
Okay. So then you'd gotten to know him while you all were working together, and then you wrote letters while he was in the service. And then when he came home, then he was home for a couple days. And what happened during those few days when he came home?
The first day he was home, we went and bought a suit and something for him to wear. And the next day we got married.
Okay. Where'd you get married at?
In Kansas City, Kansas.
Kansas City, Kansas.
And you didn't have to have a marriage license. You didn't have to have, I don't know, nowadays, you know, you do, but...
You just went to the Justice of the Peace and got married?
No, it wasn't Justice of the Peace. It was a preacher.
Oh, it was
a preacher.
We
went to a church.
Okay. You went to a church.
But we didn't have no witnesses, no marriage license. You just got married.
Okay. Did you wear a wedding gown?
Yeah, I have one in them pictures.
Yeah.
But we'd bought it a long time before.
Oh, you did?
Before he ever went overseas.
Okay. You and Dad bought that wedding dress before he ever went overseas. So you had planned to get married before he ever left.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the picture is of you two in a hotel or someone, it looks like a beautiful lobby of a hotel.
Continental Hotel downtown.
Okay, that's where you had your honeymoon?
Well, that's where we spent the night after we got married.
Yeah, yeah, and so you had a picture taken there.
He didn't let me go back home and get any clothes or anything, so I had to wear my wedding dress back home. And so we came downstairs that morning. They took the pictures.
Okay. That's how that happened then. All right. Okay. Tell me about married life after that.
Well, for about the first 6 months, I think we lived with his parents.
Okay.
Then we rented a house up by Glenn's. It was an old brick house, and it only had two rooms that was fit to live in. So I think we gave the landlord $100 for a year's rent there.
Okay.
That's where Linda was born.
Okay.
And we had bought a bunch of cattle with my money. I had a little bit of money, and that was income. And
you bought cattle?
And I guess we lived there a year. I think we must have had a lease, because they're close to Glenn's. And Linda was a premature baby.
Okay, tell me about Linda and her birth there at that house.
Well, there ain't much to tell. She was born there, and the doctor spent all night there.
You did have a doctor there when she was born. She was premature, so how did you know that it was your first child? How did you know that you were having the baby since? How premature was she?
Well, I think she was probably 6 weeks or so. She was pretty premature.
Okay.
Well, it was on Sunday afternoon, and I went into, you know, I got labor pains, and she wasn't due, and I kept trying to tell Lane that something was wrong, and he'd just say, lay down, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
So finally he went up and got Bernice, and she came down there. She said she's going to have the baby.
Okay.
So that's when he had to get a doctor.
Okay.
And the doctor came and spent the whole night there.
And so you had Linda the next morning?
Early the next morning.
Okay.
She didn't weigh too much. I don't think she even weighed 4 pounds.
Okay.
And Lane's mother, and back then they made you stay in bed 10 days.
Oh.
Believe it or not. And his mother was there, and I don't know, she had something about the 8th day was the day you got to stay in bed.
Okay, so you had to stay in bed. Okay, did they bring, so they waited on you then? Or?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Then she went home, and I remember Lane cooked, I think it was on a Sunday, he killed a chicken, and he made noodles, chicken and noodles. And that was a whole plate full I got for dinner.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up here. This is just kind of a postscript. If you've been listening to this, you realize there was two interviews, or at least one and then a partial one. We thought we were recording over the first interview, and we didn't. And now that we've listened to both of them, there are some repeats, and we apologize for that. But there's also different information in both interviews, and so we've decided to keep both of them if the Genealogy Center will let us do that. So we'll go ahead and wrap it up, even though this one isn't complete, because we've actually gone over the time limit. And anyway, so I just want to thank Mom again for sharing all this information with us. And I think we could go on and on. And maybe we will visit this again sometime and do some more. But for now, I just want to thank you, Mom, and just tell you that thank you from your whole family for being the loving, generous person you've been. And we just love you, and I love you, and thanks for doing this.
Well, I just hope you all enjoy both of them. And I'm sure that there's other things that I forgot, but there's plenty of it on there, I think.
Yeah, and she's written some things down in a log, and I'm going to encourage her to continue to write in this log, so we'll have that as well.
And this hand gets better.
Okay. Thanks again, Mom.
I thought of something just a little bit ago, but I don't know what it was now.